59, Side A, the Senate Insurance Bank and Retirement Committee. It's April 24th, Hearing Room C, and the agenda is SB 507, 606, 708, and 737.
Come to order. The clerk will note those present. All others are excused. Senator Isham, we're going to open up the hearing on the bill that he wants to testify on, and then on Senate Bill 606, I'm going to hear him, and then I'm going to go to Senate Bill 737 right away.
How about 701?
We won't take that live.
We won't. Okay. Senator Isham.
Thank you. For the record, Senator Del Isham, Senate District 2. Senate Bill 606 is intended to make a small change in the insurance code, a change that would benefit the consumer in one limited and rare circumstance. The bill is intended to declare that a hit-and-run damage on a parked vehicle is a comprehensive claim instead of a collision claim, as it's usually determined in the insurance industry. The bill, however, is badly flawed. It probably takes the award for the worst drafted bill of the session.
Typical Isham.
And I apologize for introducing it without reading it over, evidently. The definitions are, to a great extent, in error in the bill. But I don't see the definitions really necessary, because the definitions of these terms can be found in the insurance policies themselves. So I really think they're probably unneeded. The part of the bill that I'm interested in is found in subsection 2 of the bill, and that has an error in it also. On line 20, the word liability following the term motor vehicle should be deleted.
The what?
The word liability on line 20 should be deleted. So subsection 2 is really the essence of the bill, minus that one word. If a hit-and-run vehicle or phantom vehicle causes physical damage to a motor vehicle covered under a motor vehicle insurance policy issued in this state that provides comprehensive and collision insurance, the insured shall have reimbursement under the comprehensive insurance instead of collision insurance if the insured motor vehicle was parked and not moving when the vehicle damage occurred. Of course, I'm not really sure that you need both parked and not moving, but probably parked would be satisfactory. So if you do pass this bill, you'll certainly want to do some redrafting of it. The physical damage portion of auto insurance policy is divided into two parts, comprehensive and collision. Collision covers one's own vehicle when damaged in an accident. Comprehensive covers non-accident type damage to one's own vehicle. Deductibles for collision and comprehensive are selected separately by the consumer. Comprehensive deductible is normally lower. A typical amount of deductible or out-of-pocket expense for the insurance policy owner would be $50 under comprehensive. A typical amount for collision would be $200, so it does make a difference. Examples of comprehensive type claims are a rock falling on the car, hitting an animal, an object striking the windshield, or vandalism. Senate Bill 606 would treat hit and run of a parked vehicle as just as vandalism would be treated. In other words, it would be a comprehensive claim. This is appropriate since the owner of the vehicle in this circumstance was not in an accident, just as other comprehensive claims. The owner has no control and is not involved, just as in other types of comprehensive claims. Undoubtedly, those from the insurance industry will probably say that the passage of Senate Bill 606 will bring about more claims because more people will attribute physical damage to their car to hit and run. I think it's only natural that they would resist the laws that they're already comfortable with.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator McCauley.
This would also run them out of business, too.
Pardon?
This would also run insurance companies out of business.
Yeah.
Well, that's an editorial comment I don't agree with.
Oh, come on.
But, I think you should ask...
You were talking about the things that the insurance companies would claim, and I said, that's one.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. They probably will. I think when they do make that claim, you should ask them to produce evidence of this, as to how it increased the claims under comprehensive. Many types of damage to vehicles can already be said to be comprehensive claims. This bill will not change that, and I think probably some people do cheat on their insurance and call a small accident attributable to a comprehensive type claim, such as hitting a deer or vandalism or a whole host of other non-moving kinds of damage to a vehicle. And they would do this to get the lower comprehensive deductible. Adding this provision is not going to change what some people would claim to the insurance company. This already happens sometimes. Senate Bill 606 won't change that, but the insurance company, of course, still has the right to adjust or investigate the claim, and 606 wouldn't change that either. Senate Bill 606 does recognize that the hit and run of a parked vehicle to be something beyond the control of the driver, just as well as all other types of comprehensive claims. And thus, the consumer would pay less out of pocket for repair of their vehicle under this limited circumstance. So that's the purpose of Senate Bill 606.
Thank you, Dale.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, oh, Dale, just a second.
Yes, sir.
Senator Hannon?
Dale, under line 7, where you go in the definition of comprehensive insurance, drops down to line 8, includes injury or disability of any individual for damage or loss to property. Then dropping down to line 14.
Senator Hannon, in my opening presentation of the bill, I said that the definitions, for the most part, were in error. And actually, I don't believe the definitions are even necessary in the bill because they can be found in the insurance policy. And the definitions are fairly standardized among the insurance policies already.
Well, I want to ask you,
yes.
Regardless, say we take the comprehensive definition out, but I still want to ask you, then dropping down to line 14, the definition of motor vehicle means every device in, upon, and by which any person or property is or may be transported. My question is, if we change this in subsection 2 that you've indicated is the meat of the bill, where on line 21 it says insured shall have reimbursement under the comprehensive insurance instead of the collision insurance, could that also be construed as personal injury protection on motorcycles?
No, this bill only has to do with physical damage, not personal injury, medical, or liability type coverages. The definition of motor vehicle already appears in the statute, and I don't think another separate definition is needed.
Under comprehensive insurance in another place in the statutes, does it allude to injury or disability of any individual?
Well, this bill isn't intended to address that kind of issue, only physical damage to a vehicle.
Okay, well, that's my concern, that we clarify that, delineate the fact that, we have another bill in here that I must have a foot of letters on, Senate Bill 30, personal injury protection on motorcyclists, and I just seen this and I was comparing it back and forth, and if our definition motor vehicle is so broad to include motorcycles again, they're just going to come at us through this instead of Senate Bill 30.
I think it's a poor definition along with most of the other definitions.
Okay.
I think the person that drafted the bill probably never read an insurance policy before.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. What I'd like to do at this point is, there are a number of my colleagues here on a number of other bills, and our colleagues, and what I'd like to do is that I could just jump around for just a second to get them in here and out of here. Senate Bill 708, Senator Wires. I really wanted to have the opportunity to have the Deputy Insurance Commissioner, Mr. Isham, testify on Senate Bill 606, why the sponsor, Senator Isham, was here, but and they are not necessarily in agreement on that bill. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Senate Bill 708 is an idea that was presented to me during the campaign, going door to door, when a retired man in my district collared me on why it was that he had to pay personal injury protection insurance on his auto now that he's retired and on Medicare. And I am not an expert in the insurance business by any stretch. And so at first I thought he didn't understand, and then the more I listened to him, the more I saw that I couldn't answer his question. So I asked Senator Isham, who told me to talk to his father, and between a lot of good help I've gotten from them, this bill has come about. Then in late in the year, there was a change made in the federal law to make Medicare primary. And at first I thought that was going to kill the idea of this bill, but now I've got a memo from the Legislative Council, and in talking with Tom Bessonette, it doesn't appear that it makes the bill impossible. The simple idea of the bill is that after 65, and it says 62 in here, and I would urge you to amend that to 65. After 65, when you're eligible for Medicare, then you could opt not to have personal injury protection. So you would then have health insurance under Medicare if you got hurt. Now there's some scenarios that have to be thought through on that. Tom Bessonette is here, I think, to testify to some of those probably better than I can. But it would appear that if a 65-year-old person opts out of their personal injury protection and somebody else is riding in the car with them, that they might not be covered either. Now, I think that is a little like the guest passenger idea. We should make it real clear to the public that you have to, under this bill, you have to send in a form asking to be opted out. So it's not the kind of thing that people should do without knowing about. But if they're going to be hauling their grandchildren around a lot, maybe they would want to continue to opt to have personal injury protection. But for many older people who are living on very small incomes, like this constituent that collared me, this would only save a few dollars a year, but to him, that's very important. Just a few dollars when you're living on a pension that goes up much slower than the rate of inflation. So I would urge your favorable consideration of this bill.
It just says that over 65, you do not have to have PIP coverage.
If you fill out a form and opt not to, yeah. It would be a very small savings to retired consumers. Yeah, we want to change it to 65.
And it's tied, Jan, to the 65, the recipient, the individual is eligible for
Medicare. Yeah.
Okay.
So if they got in a car wreck, they could get their medical care through Medicare.
I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go to Senate Bill 737. And Senator Monroe, why don't you come up? Oh, Senator Wingard, Senator Monroe. Oh, you want to testify, George?
Yeah, it's my bill.
Oh, that's right. Come on.
I'll be real brief.
Okay, go ahead. Please.
I can be here all the time. I'm like the lobbyist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Rod Monroe, District 7, Multnomah County. Senate Bill 737 is an equity bill. As you know, insurance is based on risk, and when you throw low-risk people in with high-risk people and come out with an average rate, you give the high-risk people a rate lower than they ought to be paying, and you give the low-risk people a rate higher than they ought to be paying, and therefore the low-risk people are subsidizing the high-risk people, and 737 is designed to alleviate this problem. It says that insurance companies shall give a discount rate to non-smokers for health insurance, life insurance, and motor vehicle liability insurance. Now, there's a preponderant body of evidence that shows that smokers are sick more, have more health problems of all kinds than non-smokers, and therefore that they issue many more claims against their health insurance than non-smokers do, and therefore they ought to pay a higher premium. Life insurance, I just read yesterday that a healthy non-smoker in his 30s has a life expectancy 8 years in excess of a healthy smoker of the same age. 8 years. So obviously, he ought to pay lower life insurance rates. He's going to live a lot longer. Motor vehicle liability policy may not seem quite as obvious to most people, but the statistics show that smokers have many, many more accidents than non-smokers, and also more violations. There's probably two reasons for that. One is that the act of lighting a cigarette while driving a car often can lead to a distraction and cause an accident while trying to get the thing lit, or ashes or hot ashes sometimes drop on the smoker's lap or on the floor and cause them to be distracted. You know, when a hot coal lands in your lap, it can be distracting. The second major reason that smokers have more accidents than non-smokers is probably related to carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide levels have a lot to do with brain function. And in a car that's filled with smoke, the carbon monoxide level is very high, and the brain function of the driver is greatly deteriorated by this fact. And so he's simply not going to be as alert and not going to be able to maneuver the car in panic situations and avoid accidents as well as a non-smoker driving along in a clean environment. There's one thing that this bill does not cover, and you should amend it to cover also homeowners' fire insurance. It seems incredible to me that I, for example, as a non-smoker, have to pay the same fire insurance premium that a smoker does when the vast majority of household fires are caused by smokers' carelessness. And since nobody in my household smokes, it's very unlikely that there'll ever be a fire in my home caused by smokers' carelessness. Since that's the number one cause of household fires, it appears to me that I ought to have a lower premium, but I don't. So I would urge you to amend this bill to include fire insurance. Now, the insurance company is going to come and they're going to lobby hard against this bill, and that's simply because it's a lot easier for them to throw high-risk people and low-risk people all into the same pool and take an average and figure the premium on that basis. It's not because they couldn't differentiate, but because it's easier for them not to. And they're going to come up with all kinds of arguments and say, well, if the public really wanted this, that they would demand it, and then they would serve them in that way. But I don't think any of those arguments hold water. I think it's an equity situation. I think people that bear a higher risk ought to pay higher premiums. People that bear a lower risk ought to pay lower premiums. It's as simple as that. Thank you for your consideration. Be happy to answer questions.
Yes, Senator Hanna.
Senator Monroe, I assume you have good statistics on your cancer and short longevity of life.
Yes.
You want to amend this to include tobacco chewers as well?
No.
Well, you know, it's interesting enough, there's a health statistic out that tobacco chewers suffer from lip cancer.
That's right.
A lot quicker than people that smoke. And maybe we ought to look at addressing the whole comprehensive issue of health. You know, if we're going to regulate, you know, the guy that drinks coffee that federal government says causes cancer, his coffee pot might have a short causing a fire in his home. You know, there's all kinds of scenarios we can take this out to.
Well, it's very easy to make fun of an idea like this. I think
I'm not making fun. I think the statistics are that it's ridiculous.
Well, the statistics are overwhelming. Joyce Owen, who will testify later, has some very firm statistics. I'd be happy to provide those for you as well. federal government, by the way, has not come out with any firm proof in terms of coffee yet. They have some preliminary studies that show that there may be a relationship between drinking coffee and increased heart attack, but the evidence is not nearly as preponderant as it is for smoking. Now, it is true that people that chew probably get lung and mouth cancer more than people that don't chew, but the whole realm of health problems caused by smoking is, you know, to not just to cancer, to heart disease, to chronic bronchitis, to emphysema, and many other diseases are tied to smoking, not just a cancer of a certain small part of the body. So I think it's an entirely different issue. If you want to deal with that issue, fine. If you want to include chewers in the health and life insurance portions of this, fine. I don't think it would be appropriate to include them in fire insurance and in auto liability insurance.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Wingard.
Chairman, I'd like to have Joyce Long come up.
Come right up, please.
As a matter of introduction, Mr. Chairman, Joyce Owen is one who is primarily responsible for passing the Clean Air Act for the city of Eugene. I want to give you a little bit of my history on this subject. In 1977 and in 79, I sponsored a series of smoking bills. It seems that now the time has come. People have finally recognized the hazards of smoking and are willing to do something about it. Maybe it's also because the one who is so effective against in lobbying against these bills is now retired in Mexico. and I won't relate his name to you. I think most of you know his name. He may reappear, though, as the phantom lobbyist. However, he may not, because of all the investigations going on also, he may not want to come back.
That's the other bill.
But as an introduction, I think the important thing to remember is what Senator Monroe said, other than Joyce has statistics and that kind of material. But I want to give you one generalization, and that is we're finding, or at least we're recognizing, we've known for a long time it's the lack of oxygen that creates so many problems in the human body, including seeing. And some of you, I know I've mentioned this too, but I threw away my glasses here a couple years ago, and part of the problem with seeing, of course, is oxygen to the brain and then through the ocular structures and to the eyes. And now if I start trying to read and my vision is fuzzy, I take two deep breaths and it clears my vision. Try it sometime without your glasses, and it works. That's the issue we're talking about in smoking, the health reasons in smoking. It's the lack of oxygen. And actually, the friends I know who smoke, generally, I would say, are brighter than average. And I think one of the reasons they find they must smoke is to bring themselves down to the level of the others they have to deal with. Now, I'm not kidding you. I look at one friend who was the outstanding physics student at Oregon State University, who was my classmate, always smoked, and I knew it was because he wanted to keep his brain level activity down to about the level of everybody else around him. Well, that's my introduction on a humorous note, but I want to introduce to you Joyce Owen, who called me about this bill, and I introduced it at her request, and I think you'll find that she's knowledgeable in this area.
Thank you, Senator. Joyce, go right ahead.
Okay, I'm Joyce Owen from Eugene. Can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Lane County chapter of the Association for Non-Smokers' Rights. I'd like to thank the chairman and the committee, and I would like to thank Senator Wingard particularly for introducing this bill. Cigarette smoking, as everyone knows, is the largest preventable cause of illness, disability, and premature death in the United States. Cigarette smoking kills 350,000 Americans each year. As everyone knows, it causes heart disease, vascular disease, cancer of the lung, larynx, oral cavity, esophagus, bladder, and pancreas. It causes chronic bronchitis and emphysema. Maternal smoking is associated with increased risk of miscarriage, retarded fetal growth, birth defects, premature birth, and hyaline membrane disease, sudden infant death syndrome, pneumonia, and chronic bronchitis. Workers who smoke have a much higher risk of developing occupational respiratory diseases and cancer than non-smokers, for example, black lung disease of coal miners and lung cancer of asbestos workers and uranium miners. Among working people, smokers are ill more often than non-smokers. They lose more days from work and are more apt to suffer from chronic conditions which limit activity. They also have twice as many on-the-job accidents as non-smokers. The National Center for Health Statistics calculates that each year workers spend nearly 150 million days in bed due to cigarette-caused illness. Now, for life expectancy and death rates, all studies show that smokers have a shorter life expectancy than non-smokers. The 1979 Surgeon General's report claims that male light smokers have 4.6 years shorter life expectancy, and male heavy smokers have 6.2 years. And these life expectancies vary by the age. Now, 25-year-old male smokers have about an 8-year shorter life expectancy. Cigarette smoking is associated with a 61% increase in overall death rate. In the age group 35 to 44, smokers have an 86% higher death rate. In the age group 45 to 54, they have 152% higher death rate. That's 2.5 times as high a death rate as non-smokers. Most of these figures are from the Surgeon General's report, and a lot of them are in this little booklet which I've given to the committee as a reference. Some of them are from this booklet called Smoking, Tobacco, and Health, a fact book published by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Unfortunately, this is my only copy of this book. Joseph Califano said in the preface to the 1979 Surgeon General's report, and I quote now, "Each year, the health damage resulting from cigarette smoking costs this nation an estimated $27 billion in medical care, absenteeism, decreased work productivity, and accidents. A large fraction of these costs are borne by the entire public, smokers and non-smokers, through health insurance, disability payments, and other private and taxpayer-supported programs." End of quote. Two ways of cutting down the cost to the non-smokers are by increasing cigarette taxes, which now provide a revenue only a fraction of the cost of smoking to the general public, and by reducing insurance rates for non-smokers. Now, auto insurance. Everyone knows, of course, that smoking causes illness and premature death, but most people don't realize that smokers have more automobile accidents than non-smokers. A Columbia University study showed that among drivers with no accidents or violations, only 18.6% smoked. Among drivers with an average number of accidents and violations, 32.9% smoked. And among drivers in the high accident and violation group, 54% smoked. Another study showed similar results. Only 15.9% of the low-risk group smoked, 25.8% of the median risk group, and 37.5% of the high-risk group. This information came from Farmers Insurance Group. Farmers Insurance also studied their own claims and found that non-smokers had 3.75 claims per 100 policies, and smokers had 6.59 claims per 100 policies, nearly twice as many claims. The State Mutual Life Assurance Company of America studied 105,000 of their policyholders and found that smokers have 2.6 times more fatal automobile accidents than non-smokers. These figures become even more dramatic when you consider that only one-third of adult Americans are smokers. One of the possible reasons that Rod Monroe already mentioned for these accidents is the carbon monoxide level of smokers. Carbon monoxide is a poisonous gas. It impairs reflexes and concentration, and of course, in large amounts can lead to death. The carbon monoxide in cigarette smoke replaces up to 12% of the oxygen carried by hemoglobin in the blood. In the laboratory, prolonged exposure to only 10 to 15 parts per million impairs the ability to judge time intervals. At 30 parts per million, vision and physical responses are affected. In a smoky car, levels can exceed 90 parts per million. Lower auto insurance rates for non-smokers would save us money, but another beneficial effect might be that they might serve as a powerful deterrent to teenage smoking. Large numbers of teenagers become regular smokers each year. In 1979, about 12.5% of children aged 15 to 16 were regular smokers. And of boys 17 to 18, 19.3%. And of girls 17 to 18, 26.2%. That's a lot of smokers. The possibility of contracting heart disease or lung cancer may seem remote to a teenage smoker, but the certainty of paying higher auto insurance premiums has immediate consequences. Now, for fire insurance, SB 737 should apply to fire insurance as well as the other types of insurance. Cigarettes are the leading cause of fire in Eugene.
Here. Were you here when Frank was testifying?
No.
Well, Frank had a bill, and the last time he describes bills in terms of what type of animals they remind him of. Now we ask him.
Go ahead.
I know, may I just philosophize a moment, Mr. Chairman? I know that hearings don't always deal with the underlying issues on which decisions are made, and sometimes in hearings the focus gets into certain details of and areas that are greatly interesting to the individual members, and I think sometimes, and I'm not speaking critically, but it's just my observation, sometimes the focus of the discussion is not on really the key principle that is at issue in a bill. And to me, This bill is of much more concern to me than all these mandated health insurance bills, which I don't happen to personally favor, but which are not regulatory issues and on which we don't take a position. This bill gets to the question of whether or not the legislature is going to determine the pricing policies of the insurance companies. And for the most part, the legislature has not done so, and I think properly not done so. Witnesses, Mr. Miner and others, have testified that these pricing decisions are made by insurance companies as a business judgment, and unless they are getting into an area where there is some strong social policy which they are violating in making these decisions, I think that they are not a fertile area for legislative statute making. Let me just cite specifically here what I see, and this may make some of the insurance people uncomfortable, I don't know, but I just say what comes into my mind. This section 1 is made a part of chapter 743 by the bill. Now 743 deals with insurance policies. There is hardly a breath in 743, as far as I can remember, of anything about rates or rate making. It deals with the contents of policies. Now, I don't know why legislative counsel put it there. 737 would not be an appropriate area either, because life and health insurance is not subject to Chapter 737. In the case of the homeowners and the auto insurance, that would be the place where you'd normally expect it to find. Well, where does that lead you? Really, the area of the insurance code that this is really touching is 746.015, the area of unfair discriminations. And that's a big subject. And you have a bill which you're going to be hearing on unfair discriminations between men and women. And the proponents of that bill are going to say that the insurance company should not be allowed to distinguish between males and females, notwithstanding the preponderance of evidence of different mortality characteristics of males and females. But yet in this bill, you're in effect saying that You must regard differences in mortality and morbidity and risk factors in insurance. So the two bills are at opposite ends on the same basic subject, is to what extent must differences in risk characteristics be recognized by insurers? And I would just make the observation that 746.015 says basically you shall not make any unfair discrimination between individuals of equal expectation of life or between risks of essentially the same degree of hazard. Perhaps, now, the law does not now say you shall make discriminations, fair discriminations, between people who are not of the same equal expectation of life or between risks that are not of equal degree of hazard. And that's kind of what this bill is doing. It's saying you shall make discriminations between risks that are not of essentially the same degree of hazard. Well, I don't know that that's any better an idea than saying you shall not discriminate between risks that aren't of different expectations of the same degree of hazard. They're both dealing with the same subject. You're saying that insurance companies don't know enough to run their business in a sound, prudent manner and reflect individual risk differences, and it takes the legislature to tell them how to do it. And
Frank, if you could, you recognize that there are times when the legislature or Congress or any legislative body, because of the failure of an industry to respond to a social demand, that the legislature has to act to compel that particular action by that private company. And I don't think you disagree with
no,
that.
No, not at all.
The question that I think Ms. Owens has raised as far as the contents of this bill is one. Now, I'm not going to speak for her, but the fact is that after today we find out that the companies are starting voluntarily to offer this type of distinguishing feature based upon basic, I take it, just competition and economics in the industry. The one area of homeowners. Now, am I supposed to sit, and fire insurance, am I supposed to sit back and say that, well, in time that they will get to that? What if that they don't move quickly enough? Well, what if enough companies don't advertise it and offer it? And then she also threw in, I thought, a valid point about motor vehicle liability. Let's just single that one out. As social policy, maybe if kids did have to realize they were going to pay higher insurance rates for automobiles because they smoke, maybe they'd think twice about smoking. Now, isn't that a legitimate social objective?
Well, of course, I know I'm treading on dangerous ground when I speak along this vein, because I don't like to imply that I think the legislature shouldn't exercise judgments in these areas. I do. But to me, when you get into the details of deciding what are risk characteristics that insurance companies should or should not recognize, you are embarked on a thicket. You're getting into a thicket that you'll never get out of. Smoking happens to be the current issue. But it could be alcohol, as somebody mentioned. It could be overweight. It could be wood shingles versus asphalt shingles on houses. It could be compact cars versus non-compact cars. Anytime you come along with some social policy that you want to further, you make the insurance industry the whipping boy. And
I think the point is here is we require insurance in the first place. If we didn't require insurance, then people could make their own choice.
All right,
they could buy the compact car and know that, I crash it, it's less.
Senator?
And
Frank, you wait. Let me finish.
All right. I'm talking about the fact we've already required in certain instances this particular insurance. So, you know, we made the mistake maybe when we required it in the first place, but that be it or not, we made that mistake, and now we've got to consider the ramifications of that requirement.
Yes, well, that, of course, is a very good point. And I would just say to that is the only instance, practically, that you can cite of a compulsory insurance. That, by and large, insurance is voluntary. People buy it because they want it.
Well, you can't die without insurance, Frank.
What?
If you've got an estate of any kind, can't die without life insurance.
All right, Senator. But the state has not compelled the purchase of insurance in any area except automobile. And personally, I think that's one of the very good reasons why the state should not compel a purchase.
The state makes inheritance rates so high, you're absolutely required to buy life insurance. Sometimes I think there's a coalition there, an unholy coalition, but
well,
I don't accuse them.
I agree with you, and if a person is smart, they'll get rid of their estate before they need the insurance. Because the insurance costs more than the inheritance tax was almost. But at any rate, I think that the reason why, one of the reasons why mandatory insurance is a bad idea from the insurance industry point of view, and I think, is because then it gives an excuse for all kinds of regulation of that insurance. That's my point, Mr. Chairman, is that if this bill is to be seriously considered, I think it should be worked into 746.015. That's where it belongs.
746.015,
yeah. And I just foresee no end of trouble with comparable kinds of mandates.
Thank you, Frank. Yes. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator.
I was just thinking that to follow his reasoning.
You can go ahead, Frank. Don't engage in this.
Yeah, to follow your reasoning, then perhaps you shouldn't, your office shouldn't even exist, because insurance companies could just do what they want to do. Well, that's what they should do, just do whatever they want to do.
Well, you extend...
Without regulation or anything else.
You extend my argument, Senator, beyond the parameters that I would have set for it.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Would you bear with me a second?
You go right ahead, Senator Wingard.
It reminds me of the story about the
I
old,
told my Willie Nelson story,
old,
so you can
the
tell
old
yours.
Swinging politician who was known to have a lot of money, and he had a lot of girlfriends, and they come up to the reading of the will, and of course he's died, of course, and they're reading the will, and the will says, being of sound body and mind, and all the women out in the audience are waiting with bated breath, I spent it all. And I think Frank represents that attitude.
I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill
737.
I'm going to go back to Senate Bill 606 and call Mr. Quentin Isham up.
Yes. That's appeasing all my colleagues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Mr. Isham, I don't know if you heard Senator Isham speak, but I have your memorandum, and it may be short. And what he suggested was that, he said, have been negligent in not reading closely the definition section of the bill, and two, he said, he doesn't really think it's needed. So if you're going to talk about the definitions, I think Dell ran away from him before you got here.
Well, he had the privilege of reading my notes.
Is that what?
And I didn't have the privilege of reading his. But I only got in on the tail end of his. But I think maybe my view on definitions is maybe a little bit different than his. The definition of comprehensive insurance, as in the bill, is not a definition of comprehensive insurance. It could be better stated that comprehensive insurance means insurance under a motor vehicle liability policy issued in this state against loss from physical damage to a motor vehicle insured under the policy when caused by other than collision, and includes fire and theft losses. There is no present definition in the statutes for comprehensive insurance.
So your opinion is that if, in fact, that the committee moves to this type of a bill and they're going to use the word comprehensive insurance, it does need a definition?
I would say it would need a definition.
Okay. And the one that you have in your testimony is the one
you have a copy of that?
Yes, sir, I do.
Oh, okay. I think that would be adequate for the definition.
Okay.
And the definition under motor vehicle, we have other definitions in the insurance code on motor vehicle, and the motor vehicle department has definitions on motor vehicles, and there's none of them read exactly the same. As a point of some study sometime in the future, it might be well to have a whole chapter in the code on definitions. because they're sure confusing, at least when it gets to motor vehicle.
But you proposed one that's in 743-786 sub 2.
Yes, for the purposes of the insurance sections, there would be no need for a definition. And the phantom automobile doesn't seem to come into play at all on this because...
that's the greatest.
It's kind of hard to understand.
I was wondering how that there could be a phantom automobile where it says on line 18, no physical contact.
Now, I can agree with the concept and the motivation for this law that would require benefits for autos damaged while parked when the owner has no control or is not involved. However, I'm not sure that this solution is practical. Historically, comprehensive coverage either has no deductible or a smaller deductible than the collision coverage. If this bill passes, claims for parked cars now covered under collision with a deductible of $200 would be under comprehensive coverage with a deductible, say, of $50, which is kind of the general policy being issued now. I use the deductible amount strictly for example purposes. I foresee, though, every automobile with a dented fender or scratched door as an immediate claim, particularly under the comprehensive insurance that has no deductible. I've got some things in my car out there that I'd like to have fixed.
I'll bet. I see it now. I see it. Every scratch you get, you say, I don't know how it happened. It
right.
was just parked there.
It was parked there and it happened. And another thing, you're dealing with claims of just a few dollars generally, and it costs as much to settle a small claim as it does a large claim. I foresee that my insurance rates are going to go up to pay for these. The other thing that's going to happen, insurance companies are reluctant to raise rates, even though they're required to. They're a little reluctant to. But the policies that will be offered will be those with a common deductible, the same for both comprehensive and collision. And so this bill would actually accomplish nothing. In fact, in the commercial auto, it is a common deductible now. There is no difference between comprehensive and collision.
I was going to ask. Then your recommendation is.
Well, my recommendation is.
Don't touch it.
If I were there, I'd make a motion to the floor, but I'm here.
So. I think we're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 606 right now. I appreciate you taking the time.
Okay.
Oh, I need to ask a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Are you in the insurance business or?
I'm Deputy Insurance Commissioner.
Oh, I see.
I avoid the legislature as
you
much
must
as
have
I can.
That because I hadn't. I never drew the connection between the names.
Well, sometimes parents feel like they've misguided the youth.
All that hard work. Well, I would refer to this bill as the bill that. The only way that you wouldn't have it taken care of is if it couldn't drive it from when you hit the telephone pole and get it in front of your house. You could have it towed there. I don't know what happened to it. When I went in last night, it was all in one piece.
Phantom telephone pole.
Thank you.
Thank you much.
I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 606. I want to return to Senate Bill 708. Mr. Bessonet.
Be right there.
You know, I like this. There's a group of hobbyists who I've never dealt with, other people that I've never been.
Yeah.
Part of the legislature, it's always labor.
Yeah.
It's just.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chairman, and
gentlemen of the committee. I'm Tom Bessonette with Oregon Mutual Insurance Company.
Gentlemen,
Senate Bill 708 is laudable in its intent. However, I think it proves to be very impractical as far as the insurance buying public is concerned. Senator Wires has already spoke to the fact that it should be 65 instead of 62 as far as the ages are concerned. One of the other problems we get into is that Medicare is available to a disabled individual if they have been disabled for a period of 24 months for that individual only and not members of his household. In other words, you could have a 24-year-old male married and be totally disabled for 24 months. He might then opt to waive his PIP coverage, and his spouse would not be covered by PIP under those circumstances. I have provided in a handout the National Association of Independent Insurers commentary on the Omnibus Reconciliation Act of 1980, which makes Medicare a secondary payor as far as auto insurance is concerned. Basically, what has happened is that the Senate and House did not concur, which seems to be a political reality in many cases, but the conference committee finally came down to the fact that Medicare, in an attempt to decrease expenses of Medicare itself, made it secondary to liability insurance and no-fault insurance in auto as well, and they use the word liability insurance, which now puts us in a quandary as to whether or not it applies to commercial property and homeowner Section 2 coverages and everything else. But we're talking about auto insurance, and so this amendment then makes it makes Medicare pay first, but then subrogate against the auto insurance carrier if the Secretary of HEW wants to or feels that the amount is worthwhile. And this really creates havoc in the state of Oregon with our particular program, because some companies have been paying in addition to Medicare today, and some companies have not. They've been saying Medicare was primary, and therefore they should pay. Now we have the situation where Medicare says we're secondary, but we'll pay first and then subrogate. So I don't know what that's going to do to us, but that isn't covered by the bill. The bill says that these people can opt out by signing a statement that is provided by or designated by the insurance commissioner and provided by the liability carrier. And anybody over the age of 65, I would assume, we would have to notify that they were, in fact, had availability of this exception to the deal. Let me cite some of the premiums that we're actually talking about. Most of the companies for 6 months would charge $10 for the PIP coverage. To cover anybody in your car for medical expenses up to $5,000, $750 wage loss, or $1,000 funeral expense. Some companies would charge $12 in a metropolitan area because their hospital charges are higher there for 6 months. So that's $24 a year we're talking about.
Tom?
Yes.
With the repeal of the guest passenger statute, what would that do to this? Would it say that in essence anyone over 65 in theory could not put anyone in their car under 65 for the coverage? Wouldn't that be?
Excuse me.
If in fact, if passengers now have claims against the driver,
right,
and the person is over 65 and has no PIP coverage, what's going to happen to the passenger if they're injured?
They would have to sue under the liability portion of the policy, assuming that the 65-year-old was the owner of the car.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, in fact, there'd be no PIP coverage at all.
That's right. And the grandchild situation, yeah. It just raises havoc with it. The spouse who is not 65, along with the the beneficiary, it also raises havoc with an individual. As I read the amendment on. Sorry, I don't have pages numbered there, and I lost my copy, but it says that the plan that the individual, of an individual at the time, could have opt out. So the husband and wife, both being 65, both being under Medicare, opt out. And so they do not have PIP on the auto policy at all. And then they take another Medicare people who are on Medicare of 65 years of age and everything, and they have a crash in the back seat as a passengers. They have not opt out of PIP. And so I see that it raises nothing but havoc with a good working law that we now have. And I really see where we're going to end up with a lot of complaints, even more complaints than the high price premium. And I certainly don't know the solution to it, but I do feel that the bill is...
The problem is that it basically puts the individual who opts out into a position that a fairness to all of the drivers that get in their automobile is that if they opt out, you should have a sign mm-hmm. on the door that says, attention, anyone who rides in this car, I do not cover PIP, carry PIP coverage.
Yeah.
And if you are injured, you're going to have to sue me under my general liability policy.
Or, yes, that would be true. Or if they were driving the car, the person who did not opt out was driving the car, there would be no coverage then at all because they couldn't sue themselves for their own negligence.
No, that's right.
And so it's a bill that I appreciate the intent of trying to keep down expenses, but I just don't know how we're going to do it and work within the structure of our law.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if I'm... Excuse me.
Let me ask you this. Do you want the bill in with the amendments in it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's what you want.
That's where I was going to go from here. Okay. And I didn't try and kill a bill just because I need the vehicle.
I understand. No.
Now, if I may go on to the other intent of what I would suggest that we do with the bill. As you will recall, Senator Hannon brought up the motorcycle PIP problem of Senate Bill 30. This particular bill, 708, deals in the exact area of the law, namely the 800, their section 743-800. I would suggest that we take this bill and modify the Garrow decision, which requires that the automobile PIP coverage covers motorcycle and uninsured accidents. I have proposed amendments on your desk, I think at least they were to be handed out, that were commentaries prepared by Frank Howitt of the Insurance Commissioner's Office with my help, mainly him.
Yes,
and
Mr. Chairman?
Then
yes, Senator McCormick.
Are you referring to proposed amendments to Senate Bill 30?
And yes.
Now 708, okay.
Right. They're proposed on 30 because that's where we originally worked them. They will work into it 708 very easily.
Okay. Now, you've got two sets of amendments as they relate to Senate Bill 30. You've got what's called OM1, and then there's another series of amendments that are called, just entitled Senate Insurance Banking Retirement Committee. Now,
okay,
which one?
Let's refer to OM1, please.
Okay. Okay.
The other ones, you could put in the back of the file.
Okay, that's this.
I would, yes,
that's in the back of the file.
Okay, that's
in
the
back of the file.
Okay, so we're going to deal from the, okay, that are in the back of the bill. Okay, I've got it now.
Okay, the OM1 amendments, you have a commentary on them, and basically, I'll just go quickly through what I think is your packet as I have them. You have the OM1 amendments, commentary, you have the amendments themselves, and then you have a hand-engrossed bill that says Senate Bill 30, which for all practical purposes now would be 708 if it was accepted.
Okay. You have a commentary?
If you will do this, is that what they are is they're kind of...
They're clipped together.
What right. Mr. Bessonet did is he originally proposed these amendments to 30, and then after he got to looking at it, he wanted to do something else. And so the packet is all together. It includes the original amendments, OM1 amendments, the commentary, and the engrossed version of the bill. Go ahead, Tom.
Has he changed from one group of amendments to the other, the actual content of the amendments?
Well, that's what I don't know what he's really changed.
From one...
Just from Senate Bill 30 to 708, have you changed the contents of what you had that you wanted to put in 30?
No,
it's the same identical thing.
It would be the same thing. What I would actually propose, Mr. Chairman, for the benefit of the committee is that they would adopt the amendments, have that bill in 708 engrossed with these amendments in it, and then bring it back for further hearing, which then would be able to look at it.
Can you go get Hannon? Okay. Let's do that. Let me ask you a question, Tom. Are you going to require PIP coverage of motorcyclists?
Not with Senate Bill, with OM1 amendments. Do not require PIP coverage on motorcycles. It takes that decision away.
Okay. I just, I'm worried about that because if we're going to pass the helmet law again, I don't know. If I want to pound them twice.
Okay. Well, we would not, with OM1, we correct that decision so that they do not, we do not require to insure them under the auto policy, and they are not required to carry PIP insurance on motorcycles under OM1 amendments.
Okay. Senator Troll moves that the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 708, which are identified as OM-1-32081, be amended into Senate Bill 708, and that the amended version of the bill be sent and engrossed and then returned to the committee for further hearing. You've heard the motion.
Just one brief.
Yes.
Is this to get away from the stigma of Senate Bill 30?
I would say yes.
Yeah, I just don't want to fill this room up with people myself.
Okay,
that's
but
the motorcycle thing. PIP coverage.
This does not put motorcycles under PIP.
This takes
motorcycles out of PIP.
Okay. My next question is, does this provide protection to the insurance companies retroactive back to the time that the court case was made up to the present moment that this would become law? That was the concern, I believe, of the insurance companies. But the concern of the motorcyclists was that they would be left out from this point forward.
It would not apply to any cause of action until the effective date of the act. So anybody who was injured prior to the effective date of the passage of the bill or the bill becoming law would be covered under the Garrow decision or would have PIP coverage up till this law became effective.
Okay, that's
so it is not retrospective at all, and I certainly want that very clearly identified.
Well, you're going to get a chance to say that again.
Yeah, I wanted to get that in.